the OTB Podcast Network.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Morning to you, David.
Good morning.
How's the form?
I'm good, thank you. Yourself?
Flying, thanks, yeah. So much to get to with Liverpool-Chelsea, I think, primarily is kind of what we want to focus on. And we might just get straight into it with the signing of Thiago. I mentioned there, where does he fit in? Who misses out?
Ooh, I think it's a million-dollar question, isn't it? You look at, you know, the Liverpool's strongest midfield has probably always been Fabinho with Henderson and Wijnaldum. It's a case of, look, a player of his calibre can play as the deep line one, so he could go in for Fabinho, or he could go more advanced instead of Henderson or Wijnaldum. I think it's a great option for Jurgen Klopp to have. Look, they've always, you know, wanted to strengthen their midfield, and, you know, if you bring in players of his calibre, you know, the level will only go up. So it's going to be important for, you know, the Liverpool players, because he's going to bring that new quality and some, you know, extra skill that, you know, maybe some of the Liverpool players don't have, you know, the same as him. But it'll be certainly interesting to see how he fits him into the team.
Yeah, I mean, there is that, and then there's also the breadth of talent that's there that obviously were like rammed home to the Premier League last season. You know, you mentioned some of them there, whether it's Henderson or Wijnaldum, Fabinho, Milner, Oxlade-Chamberlain, Keita coming back, and now he's in there. Like, I mean, is there any possibility that this ends up destabilising things a little bit? Because, like, you can talk about competition for places and how much it drives players on, but at some point, that becomes less important to many of those players. Far less important than actually getting game time themselves.
Yeah, well, if you look at, you know, Jurgen Klopp's track record, he's always found the right balance in, you know, rotating players and giving players enough time. Of course, every footballer wants to play every minute of every game, but it's nearly impossible. Like, there has been talks of, you know, clubs inquiring about Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. You don't know, will he move on? Of course, James Milner's as fit as he is, he's another year older. Obviously, he's in the last year of his contract, or he signed a one-year extension. I'm not 100% sure. But someone of Thiago, who is, what, 30 now, you know, it's exciting. You know, it's a big player to come to Liverpool. He's just fresh off winning a treble at Bayern Munich, who was a mainstay in their team. But he felt, you know, he wanted a new challenge and then to come to the Premier League. So that's the challenge that Jurgen Klopp faces. He's got all these excellent players who've been very successful over, you know, the last three seasons, of course. You know, in the first of those three, they lost the Champions League final, but still to get there and then go on, win the Champions League, win the Premier League. It should look, it's a busy fixture list. Obviously, we know it's a shorter season this year, so, you know, there'll be plenty of games, and I imagine he'll rotate well.
It seems, David, over the last little while that Henderson, Wijnaldum and Fabinho have all had a very bespoke role in that midfield for Liverpool. Which of those three roles does Thiago and his attributes fit in best to?
Well, if you look at the last, you know, serious competitive game Bayern Munich played would be the Champions League final, and we saw Thiago playing as deep line, you know, playmaker. He was getting the ball from the back four, off the goalkeeper. So you're looking, really, is he going to go in as the deep line one in Fabinho's role? At times we've seen, you know, Fabinho and Henderson swap. It's a tough one that, like, is he a lot better than Fabinho in that position? He probably adds different qualities. Look, he's very calm. He's assured on the ball. He's got an excellent range of passing. He's very skillful. You know, I think the way Jurgen Klopp will do it, it's almost as if he's got Fabinho and Thiago for that position. Obviously, if the two were to pick up injuries, then Henderson can drop back in. But then I think it will become like Henderson, Keita in midfield, and then like Wijnaldum, Milner and Oxlade-Chamberlain. I think he's almost looking at two players per position in midfield to kind of, you know, keep it fresh, be able to rotate and keep a good balance.
So Thiago versus Fabinho, basically.
Well, if I had to pick one, I think it will be Thiago versus Fabinho, yeah.
You obviously watched the game last weekend, and we all kind of left it, David, a bit surprised. Even listened to John Giles there just before the break, saying that they took him by surprise how good they were, and he's a man who knows a thing or two about Leeds generally. Where do you sit on it? Is it like Leeds is suddenly going to challenge for the top four, or or conversely a bit of a blip for Liverpool at the opening? I mean, they won the thing, but a blip in terms of what we expected from them in the opening weekend.
I don't think Leeds will challenge for the top four, no. I think they're a long way off that yet. I do believe they will be up around the 10th mark. I think they'll be very comfortable. I kind of expect them to do almost what, you know, Sheffield United did last year, where they take the league by storm. Obviously, if anyone watched the game, we were full of admiration for them. A lot of people will be quick to highlight that Liverpool, you know, didn't play particularly well. Like, you know, obviously Bamford's goal was Van Dijk's mistake, but I think we have to give more credit to Leeds in that they didn't leave Liverpool play well. They didn't leave them dominate the ball. I think Leeds took the game to them. Of course, Anfield is one of those stadiums where when the crowd is there, it's a lot different. And I think for Liverpool, they need to adjust to that a lot quicker than other teams will, you know, playing at home. But going back to Leeds, I think, you know, they're exciting. You looked at even the 75th, 80th minute, those players are still, you know, breaking their lungs, making loads of runs. They look fit as probably the fittest team in the Premier League. So I think, you know, they will be good value for money this year, and they will cause a lot of teams upsets.
How it translated this weekend obviously remains to be seen, but like, it's a fascinating matchup in some ways. That I don't know what sort of the score prediction I'm on here, but like, you've got a team obviously who can't really defend against the counter attack, and a team who can't stop scoring on the counter attack. It all points to one outcome.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, isn't it? You know, results are hard to come by in this league, and if you can start to keep clean sheets, or, you know, defend well, and then, you know, your forwards are, you know, producing goals and scoring goals, then, you know, you look like you can win games, and that's the most important thing, really.
The game this weekend, David, obviously has an added layer to proceedings, with Frank Lampard's outburst on the sideline at the end of last season, Jurgen Klopp's comments 2 weeks ago, Lampard then hitting back at Klopp, saying his comments were slightly amusing. They've tried to deny that a real beef is emerging here. What do you think?
I think guys in the press make it out to be more than it actually is. If you looked at the game at Anfield, you know, obviously there was the little back and forth between Frank and Jurgen. I think it's part and parcel. Both competitive men who want to win. You know, these things boil down. And then obviously I know Jurgen's comments about being owned by an oligarch, you know, in the sense that they can go and spend 200 million. But if you look at it, they had the transfer ban, they sold Hazard. You know, they've more or less spent what they, you know, received. So it's just, I think Frank has more, you know, important things to be worrying about. I know they beat Brighton 3-1. I didn't think their performance was, you know, spectacular. If you looked at the goals they scored, you know, Brighton turn over the ball pops into the box, Timo Werner's brought down. The second is an absolute screamer from Reece James. The third is a set piece. I feel the big thing Frank has is, how long are these new players going to take to settle? Like, we don't know, will it be, you know, the now or the end of September, the start of October? Like, they've brought in some very exciting players. I think Timo Werner would probably be huge for them. I think he'll score a lot of goals. But then he played Kai Havertz to the right. I'd like to see him probably play through the middle, where, you know, Loftus-Cheek played. Obviously, Ziyech is coming through. And then, you know, Thiago Silva, does he come in for Zuma or does he come in for Christensen? And then it's just a case of, you know, how these players get in and get settled, and, you know, around the team. That's the big challenge he faces. And it will be a tough game against Liverpool. There's no doubt in that. But I think Liverpool's result against Leeds will almost give them kind of a kick up the backside to say, like, look, these are competitive games now. You know, everybody is coming for you. You're the team that everybody wants to beat. And I think Liverpool will go into that wanting to put a marker down. And of course, then Frank Lampard's thinking, this is the biggest test for us because they are Premier League champions.
The point on, I guess, how you actually managed to develop as a unit now, and quite a young unit over the next couple of months, is going to be very interesting. You mentioned Kai Havertz there. He didn't have a good debut, David. It was a tough night for him on Monday night. The question I would have about a player who comes in, he's 21 years of age, is, where are the leaders going to be in that dressing room to, I guess, take Havertz under the wing and say, listen, it's going to be okay? Because it seems that they've cobbled together some outrageous talent here. But where are the leaders going to come from in these tough moments is a question I would certainly have.
And even if you look through the squad, I'd probably ask the same question. You know, they're a very young side. Yes, Thiago Silva's coming in, but it's not as if he's, you know, played with Kai Havertz before or what have you. Like, Chelsea have always been known for, you know, your John Terry, your Frank Lampard, Peter Cech, Drogba, like that spine of the old Chelsea team were big characters who you could probably turn on if, you know, things weren't going too well, if you weren't settling in. You often hear great stories of John Terry helping players out when they sign. You know, what do you need? Do your kids need to get into certain schools? He was meant to be fantastic with all little things like that. But then, like, you look at now, this team, it is very young. You know, Reece James, you know, Marcus Alonso probably won't play once Ben Chilwell is fit. So then you're looking at Zuma, Christensen, Rudiger. Like, of course, the big German three of Rudiger, Havertz and Werner, they'll probably lean on one another a lot. But then, like, Jorginho doesn't strike me as a character who's going to be too forthcoming outside of football. Yeah, he'll be in and around the training ground and helping fellas out. But, you know, of course, N'Golo Kante, who's the nicest man in the world or the nicest footballer in the world, he's all smiles. But, you know, I think it's going to be a challenge for them players to pull around to, you know, help those young lads settle in. Because there's no doubting their ability. They're all wonderful players and we all want to see them do really well. But it's just, it's like I said, it goes back to what I originally said. It's how long is it going to take them to settle into that team?
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting. It's also going to be a very interesting couple of weeks from a Tottenham perspective as well, David. We could have the second big signing of the week after Thiago completed in the next couple of days, which is Gareth Bale on loan to Tottenham. What I find interesting about this is that the thing that annoyed Jose Mourinho so much last week was that the team weren't pressing, that the team didn't have enough energy and that they were lazy. Do you believe that Gareth Bale will be able to bring that level of energy that Jose Mourinho is clearly crying out for?
Well, Gareth Bale has never been one for, you know, if you watched him over the years, never been one for the pressing. I think it's his individual skill has got him his move to Real Madrid and has got him his accolades at Madrid. I certainly think if Bale comes into that team, he's still going to need time. He's not played enough games over the last 18 months. He's not going to be able to hit the ground running. I think if any Spurs fan thinks that he will, it's unheard of. I think for Gareth, he's at a stage where he needs to play regular football. He's such an incredibly talented player. You know, we can all laugh and joke about, you know, him being on the golf course, whatever. We've seen the screenshot of some tea time with Daniel Levy this morning. So, look, I think he'll be a big impact for Tottenham. I think, you know, he'll come in and he'll be able to regenerate them in the sense that if he can get on the ball, he can free up other players because he is a wonderfully gifted footballer. But at the same time, what Mourinho is looking for with the high press and going after teams, I'm not sure that that's playing to Gareth's strong points or some of the other players.
David, I can't believe that we know you got to go and do the school run, so we're going to let you off. But, like, I want to ask you the question about beef on the sideline. Another great opportunity to get into your own sideline spats, and you turned it down. It's we're not going to rerun that fun. Listen, thanks, William, for joining us.
No problem, gents. Thank you very much.
Take it easy. Cheers.
OTB AM
with Gillette. We don't just play the game; we change it. Gillette. Made of what matters.
Vera Pau was this week asked about the decision by Germany, obviously the big game upcoming tomorrow afternoon in Essen, but by Germany's announced that they're going to be resting, I think it's four of their best players for the game away to Montenegro next week. And Vera Pau, the Republic of Ireland coach, feeling that she doesn't have an issue with them resting players, but certainly didn't appreciate them announcing it in public before they play Ireland tomorrow.
This moment better than USA, in my opinion. So we have to be very realistic. And even though we don't plan to defend a lot, because we plan to play an open game, we know that we'll be pushed back.
Do you think you can take any inspiration? You weren't involved at the time, but the game against the Netherlands 3 years ago and the nil-all draw away, that was a really good performance by Ireland that evening.
Yeah, defensively. Especially, we all know that. But The Netherlands is a complete different team than Germany. The Netherlands, they don't like when they're getting under huge pressure, and that is what Ireland did. Plus, they just won the European Championships. They had a complete different status. They couldn't walk on the street anymore. They came together for the first time again. They played against Ireland, and they thought, oh, we'll show off because the stadium is full again. So it's a complete different game. And Ireland did fantastically. I've seen that game back then, of course. But it's incomparable with this game, because this is crucial for Germany. When they win, they are qualified. They've already said that many players will not travel to Montenegro after the game. I don't know if you've seen that. The top players will not travel to Montenegro, which in my opinion is not fair play, because it's false competition. But they have the right to do that, of course. Martina can...
Yeah, it's Vera Powell there in conversation with the media yesterday. Ruth Fahey, good morning to you.
Good morning, guys. How are you doing?
Good. She's pretty disgusted, by all accounts, that the, not so much of the resting, but the announcement of the resting. Is she right?
I was a bit surprised at that one, to be honest. I think it's probably fair. I think everyone knows it's what's going to happen. I mean, Germany have played Montenegro already, absolutely annihilated them along with Ukraine. That's inevitable that they're going to rest their best players. Announcing it is just, I suppose, formalising it, verbalising it. Vera seems to think that's not fair play, but really it's what's going to happen anyway. I don't think Germany will be too concerned about that, to be fair.
Mm. She might be getting her excuses in early. by all accounts, like, it's in some ways kind of odd reading some of the, like, the preview of this game. It's, everybody understands the gulf in class here. You're talking about a team that are second in the world and arguably should be first, and a team that are 30 odd in the world, and there seems to be also a predetermination about the outcome here, even from Vera Powell, listening to this week, saying that, listen, it's not realistic to talk about us getting anything out of the game. Like, I understand the dynamic of it, and there is a gulf in class, but it seems I don't know, extraordinarily defeatist almost in some regard, even before a ball is kicked.
Yeah, and I think if you actually listen back to Vera from when she first came into the squad in 2019, there's one word I would use to describe her is realistic. She was very careful to always maintain that when the group came out, Germany were in a different level. So she's kind of had this rhetoric in place since the very start. It's true. Germany are in a different level. They're, you know, they're ranked second in the world. Ireland ranked 32. They're a different beast completely. But to, I suppose, as you say, to go in, she's trying to downplay the chances because Germany have scored 31 goals, are unbeaten in 4 games. Realistic is the word. If we're being realistic, if Ireland can keep the score, if they can concede 3 or less, that will be doing well. It's rather than being defeatist, I think it's just being realistic, because in the past, I think we've gone into games like this and kind of talked about dreams and luck and chances. I think she's trying to just set a standard for how we talk about the game here. That's all. It's not defeatist. I mean, you always have a chance. I actually, just looking through the group this morning, if Ireland could nick a draw, which is always, always possible, a draw then against Ukraine would actually be enough to get them second place in the group. Also, if Ireland nick a draw, even if Greece somehow managed to get full points, Germany aside in the next couple of games, it's still enough. So a draw is absolutely huge for Ireland. One point could do the world a difference. That could set them up in a completely different way against Ukraine come a month's time. Can they get a draw? I don't think anyone's going to bet on that. Germany, but also what's happened to Germany last year, unfortunately for Ireland, is that they've actually stepped it up. They had quite a disappointing World Cup by their own standards, getting knocked out in the quarterfinals by Sweden. Since then, they're kind of revitalised, unfortunately for Ireland. It's not what we want. They competed in the Algarve Cup just before COVID hit. They actually got to the final, beating Norway 4-0, beating Sweden 1-0. They blooded some new players. You know, when you look at their squad, they've got, I think, 5 or 6 players that are competing in the Champions League final 2 weeks ago. The likes of Marjan, Hoop, Pop, like these incredible players. And like Vera said, in her, a lot of comparisons are being made to Ireland's draw, the draw they made against the Dutch 2 years ago. These are not the Dutch. Like, these are a side who are comfortable being under pressure, clinical. They know what Ireland can bring. So it's not, rather than being defeated, it is just being realistic. You know, one eye will always be in the Ukraine game. But if Ireland can nick a point here, that's absolutely huge, and we can't forget that.
It's interesting looking back on the German response to losing in the quarterfinals last year. There was a piece done with Martina Voss Tecklenburg, the German manager, in DW.com. And the interviewer is like, it's been a few months since Germany were eliminated in the quarterfinals. Do you still lie in bed awake at night thinking about this? And then Voss Tecklenburg is like, I no longer have any sleepless nights. And when I did, this was primarily because it was a very intense time for everyone involved. Like, this is just a culture over there where it's just, they have to win the World Cup or it's failure. That's basically it, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And I remember the similar reports coming out. A couple of players came out and apologised for their World Cup performance. And we're talking a team that got to the quarterfinals. They narrowly got defeated to Sweden, but they weren't at their best. I think they were carrying a couple of injuries. They were really shockingly defeated, I think, by Sweden. But since then, they've done everything right. They've turned around completely. They've used that period, like I said, to blood new players. And then they stormed into the qualifiers. Like, the results are outrageous. Greece 5-0, beat Ukraine back-to-back 8-0. And Ukraine are probably seated slightly higher ahead of Ireland. They're not a poor side. And to beat them back-to-back 8-0, with talk about a statement, beat Montenegro 10-0. You know, in Ireland's opening game, I think we kind of struggled through that slightly. Now, that was Pau's first game, and all being fair, we beat them, I think it was 2-0 at the start. So they've responded as Germany would. I think they're coming into this game. They'll have a plan in place. I think it will be next to impossible to stop it. But if we can concede three or less, I think that'll be a positive if a performance can come through as well. And then all eyes in Ukraine.
And you talk about how they might set up, Ruth. Like, it was interesting even watching the game in Tallinn last night, like that we mentioned a bit earlier on, but for a period of the game, Rovers decide to have a goal at the start of the second half and really put Milan on the back foot, and it doesn't take they've such quality in their team, obviously, which may be a fair enough comparison with the game that we're looking ahead to tomorrow. So what? How will Ireland set up? Is it a case that they kind of stick to their usual game plan, or actually have they really got to sort of shut up shop here and try and keep the scoreline down?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And I think Pau has been asked that in the last week or so. She's been careful to state that obviously we're going to be out to defend, but she plans to play an open game, which is, I'm not sure how genuine that is. I'm not sure how much you truly want to play an open game against Germany. But I think what she means is, previously, when we went into big sides, it really would have been backs against the wall. We would have had a striker sitting deep, but like nearly in a flat six in midfield. I don't think it's going to be like that. Again, when you compare it to the Dutch game, what we have is 2 years of experience. What we have is a player like Rhianna Jarrett back, who wasn't available 2 years ago. A player who is slowly establishing herself in WSL at her peak fitness. Jarrett's a player that can actually hold up the ball and do something with it. Not that we weren't at that point before, but I think I remember the Dutch game we actually had a couple of chances. We had two or three really decent chances with the likes of Leanne Kiernan, the likes of Amber Barrett. And even comparing Kiernan 2 years ago compared to now, she's had a full season of WSL. She's an older player. She's more experienced. Amber Barrett is now playing in the Bundesliga. She knows these German players. She's got a heap of experience on her shoulders as well. I think Pau was set up using her experienced players, but also having confidence instilled in the players that if that out ball comes, they can actually do something with it. And previously, that's probably something that we wouldn't have done before. I think she might utilise Katie McCabe at left full, O'Gorman at right full, just purely for experience, and then give McCabe that leverage to go forward if she wants to. So previously under Colin Bell, I don't think they probably had an option. I don't think they had permission to actually use the ball. I don't think I ever heard him say the words open play against a team like this. So there is something slightly different about this. If you have McCabe and then you have the likes of Kiernan, perhaps Heather Payne in front of her with Jarrett playing a triangle, they can actually do something with it. I feel like if they have a counter, they can do something with it. I think that's only going to happen, being honest, you know, a handful of times, four or five, six times. I think they'll have the confidence now that they didn't have before to actually create something. And then in midfield, I think Denise will probably sit back. I'd say Jarrett will be left alone up front. We've got the Liverpool captain, Niamh Vahey. We have Megan Connolly, who's now starting for Brighton. She was a college player 2 years ago with Florida State. She's now starting for a WSL team. So there's a bit more experience, a bit more capability. And I a chance to actually do something with the ball this time. So it won't be completely backed against the wall. I hope it's not going to be something that's kind of tough to watch for a full 90 minutes. I think there will be chances for Ireland, but it's just about being smart about it.
So you think she'll go to a four at the back with Katie McCabe at left? Because it was three at the back against Montenegro, was it?
Yeah, absolutely no chance going three at the back. I just feel like she might pull Katie back left full, literally just because she's been playing there with Arsenal and doing a fine job. Just to solidify it a little bit more, I think she'll probably ask Denise to sit back just to help Niamh and whoever is beside her. And then if you can have Jared up top, if she does start her, which I think she will. I think Rihanna got her first start against Man City with Brighton last weekend, by all accounts, was flying it. So we've all seen her recently in the qualifying games. She can hold up the ball, she can turn and run. She won't be afraid of the Germans. And like I said, it could be different. There will be chances. Can they do something with it? That's up to the players then to show.
Just in an overall sense with Vera Powell, you mentioned on some of the players that she has there now and like the quality that's there. Like, and I remember being at the, was it Norway? I can't even remember where I was at the game, and I can't even remember. Was it Norway a couple of years ago, the playoff that we came up
against?
Like it felt that day that we weren't, like you mentioned Leanne Kiernan, for example, like it felt that day that we weren't necessarily playing to the strengths of that team. Is there more? It sounds like there is. Is there more of a sense of that now from the stewardship of Vera Powell, do you feel?
Yeah, definitely. I think there's no doubt about it. She's done a fine job since she's coming in 2019. Like, talk about a crazy year. Nobody anticipates a pandemic. But what she has done in the last couple of games is that she's shown that Ireland can do something with the ball. And I think that's something we hadn't previously seen before. I think Colin Bell obviously had a plan. I think he had a staged plan. He was going to solidify the defence and work from there. I think Powell came in and from the very start, she was quick to acknowledge that we do have players who can do stuff with the ball. She'd been public in her praise for the likes of Denise O'Sullivan, which is completely justified. But it's not just, you know, it's just not just Denise who can do things. Megan Connolly has been a rising star in the past, hasn't quite reached her potential. Now she's starting to do that in the WSL. So what's different now is that we have players who are actively playing abroad. So we often had a lot of players abroad who might have kind of moved contract to contract. And we have players now who are starting to establish themselves. So again, these things just take time. You know, a lot of the women's leagues are still in their budding stages. We still have five women's national league players in the squad, which is interesting, which is really good. We've won 16-year-old Ella Malloy, who is just coming through at senior level for Wexford Youth. She just got player of the month for August. So in fairness to Pau, she's building on her strengths. She's coming in at a really good time. And I often thought when Colin Bell left, I just thought that was just a real pity, because I think the Irish women's team are at a really pinnacle point in our historical development. And Pau's coming in at a really good time. She's the right person to come in. I really like the way she speaks to the media. I like her positivity, but I have to appreciate her realism as well, that, yeah, we may not go in and get in against the Germans, but she knows exactly what she's doing. And I think if she can get a performance tomorrow, her plan is very much in place.
Yeah, good stuff. And so your prediction here is, I know you're saying that if we could get a point out of, I suppose, either this Germany game or the return leg, that'd be, in a lot of respects, job done. But your prediction here is just try and keep it to 3-0 and then focus on Ukraine.
Yeah, being honest, yeah, that's my prediction. Yeah. But let's wait and see.
Wait and see what happens. Ruth, thanks a million.
Thanks a million, guys. Have a good day.
Thanks a lot.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.